Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 18th of August 2021, Wednesday, hump day. Welcome to it, halfway to the weekend. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host, conveniently named, just because my parents named me after this podcast, oddly enough. Action-packed, as always, lots of things to get to. First, let me remind you of the Curse program at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Please don't forget that. Please sign up for that. I think you'll enjoy it. And if you don't like cursing, you can still sign up for it. You don't have to listen. Nobody's forcing you to do anything. That's the beauty of America. But it helps the program. Just $5 a month. God knows I don't ask you for much. Also, as it is Wednesday, before we get to the news, I'm trying to move this along quickly. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com, by the way. It is Wednesday. Today is the day that we have our pre-recorded interview where you find out about all the great deals at our lovely, lovely sponsor, AncientLifeOil.com, with Ronnie McMullen. So here we go with that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are joined now by the proprietor of AncientLifeOil.com, my supplier, my guy for CBD, 100% pure, 100% organic CBD oil. It's Ronnie McMullen. How are you doing, Ronnie?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Derek?
I'm doing well as well. It is a new month. That means I know you. You've got something cooked up great for us at AncientLifeOil.com. What do you got for us this month?
Well, here's a scoop. So Ancient Life Oil sells CBD that really can help with anxiety, stress, and many other things that I can't mention on the show. But I want to give people a real good shot to get it at their house. So I thought I would throw just a massive sale on. Instead of saying one thing or that thing or this thing at certain percentage, I just say here, 30% off the board, 30% off of whatever you want.
That is awesome.
And if they put in the coupon code, free shipping.
Put in Derek and you get free shipping and you can't 30%. I don't know how you stay in business, Ronnie, but now is the time. Stock up for winter or whatever. Go to AncientLifeOil.com. Everything is 30% off. Holy Frank Tanana. And then you enter promo code Derek. Click apply for free fast shipping on top of that. Ronnie, you never cease to amaze. Thank you.
Thank you.
Love Ronnie McMullen. Love. I've got the Ancient Life Oil right there, right in front of me. Don't forget promo code Derek at checkout for the free fast shipping. Now, on with the program. We have, like I said, an action-packed program for you today. There's so much going on, and you sit there and you go, ooh, what are you going to do? Are you going to go through Joe Biden's speech? No, I'm not even going to play. I didn't even bother cutting up any of Joe Biden's speech. Living on the edge here. We're going to talk about Joe Biden's speech, but not going to play Joe Biden's speech. I'm going to talk about the reaction to Joe Biden's speech, because quite frankly, what Joe Biden said is irrelevant. It's bizarre to say about a president of the United States, but it was so full of lies and garbage and misinformation that it might as well have been given by a random guy screaming in a mailbox. Then he comes back, he choppers in from Camp David, because why? I don't know. There's no reason to do this from the White House if you're not going to take any questions. That was the thing. He didn't take a single question because he couldn't be bothered. Joe Biden doesn't have time for that kind of stuff. But he choppers in from Camp David, puts on a suit, goes out into the East Room or whatever room it was, gives his teleprompter delivery, which is not particularly convincing. It's just he's not a very good speech giver anymore. Now that the mind is gone, most of the thing, if you watch Joe Biden speak, and not just for his speech on Afghanistan, but for any public event, the speech is so distracting, not because of what he says, although what he says is bad and it's generally poorly delivered. It is because the look of absolute, abject terror on his eyes, in his vacant eyes, glued to the teleprompter. Glued to the teleprompter, going, oh, God, please. Let me pronounce all these words. Let me hold it together long enough to get through the speech. It's sad on many levels, but it's true. You watch this guy give a speech and he's like, he's just kind of begging, please, God, please let me get through this. See, when Barack Obama was president, they had Joe Biden's natural inclination is to sort of wing it. He's been kind of winging it. And his shtick, his thing is what one of the things he's known for is he's just Joe and he's kind of whimsical and he goes off on his own and he'll tell you in the middle of a speech about the opening of a pool, about or a naming of a pool after him, about Corn Pop wanting to fight him in the parking lot. Like, I guarantee you that wasn't scripted. But, that was, I don't know, apparently that flies in Delaware. I don't know. I don't know what works in Delaware, but apparently that must work considering they kept him there for so damn long. But that's sort of what he's used to doing. That's his shtick. Now he's got to stick to the teleprompter, and he's not comfortable with that. So they have, there are a couple of types of teleprompters. They have the ones that are on the podium, the glass that's angled at probably about a 45-degree angle with the monitor down at the bottom and that scrolls up and you can see the words. They have those, too, for Joe Biden, but Barack Obama loved using those. They also have the, I don't know, 40-inch TV, 50-inch TV, directly in back of the room, in the center of the room, that has the words written rather largely on it. It might even be 90 inches, for all I know. That's the Biden way of doing things. They do sometimes put the teleprompter up there with the two little things on either side of the podium, but he doesn't use them very often. Barack Obama used them constantly. Watching Barack Obama deliver his speech was like watching somebody watch tennis. It was right teleprompter, left teleprompter, right teleprompter, left teleprompter. It was robotic, but he could deliver the words as if they were just occurring to him. Joe Biden can't do that, and Joe Biden can't stay on the script. So now they just use the one in front, and he stares at that thing like his life depends on it. He doesn't blink very often. He doesn't divert his eyes. He sometimes moves his head. But he's like, if you're staring intently at something and you're moving your head from side to side and your eyes stay locked in that thing right in front of you, that's how Joe Biden is. It's unnerving because you're watching the president of the United States sort of fumble through this going, oh my God, is he familiar with the words, let alone the concept? And oftentimes the answer is no, which is frightening in and of itself. But his speech was just finger pointing, blaming, accusatory garbage. Like, you wouldn't believe it's the I wasn't in town that month defense. It's Donald Trump's fault. I love how this one was very popular amongst the leftist media that desperately wanted to try and polish the turd that is Joe Biden's speech yesterday and his Afghan policy. They come in, Joe Biden came out there and said, well, we were locked into what the Trump administration had left us. They did this. They said we're getting out. And what choice did we have? Well, that only holds so much water, and by so much I mean none, when you realize that every other agreement and every other accomplishment that the Trump administration achieved, such as the Remain in Mexico deal, that was negotiated internationally between the Trump administration, the United States government, and the government of Mexico. Joe Biden comes in, gone, poof, get rid of that. Well, why are you obligated to, I'm supporting the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan, but to come in and say everything's falling apart because Trump negotiated this deal, we couldn't change it. What was I supposed to do? My hands were tied. Joe Biden actually changed it. May 1st was the day that the troops were supposed to be out under the Trump deal. So Joe Biden changed that to September 11th for some bizarre reason. And now it's like, oh, we couldn't change the deal. Well, you did change the deal, dude. You absolutely changed the deal. You extended the timeline. So don't tell me you couldn't change the deal. You were locked in. Trump pulled us out of the Paris Climate Accords. You got us back in. Wait a second. How is that? Trump changed it. How can you change that back? So, no, Joe, you broke it. You bought it. The whole speech. And then he goes on to blame the Afghan people. The translators who worked with the Americans. Well, they didn't really want to get out. The reason that we didn't evacuate them sooner is because some of them wanted to stick around their country. Well, that's not how an evacuation works. First of all, I don't believe you for a second because they were clamoring. And we talked about it on this show about a month or a month and a half ago about how we don't have a plan to evacuate. The translators would have a bullseye on their backs. And they had plenty of time to do it. They said they were starting to do it. They said they were ready to do it. Now, how suddenly now, why back 6 weeks ago was it not, well, we don't have a plan to, or it seems like we don't have a plan to evacuate the translators because we talked to them and it turns out they kind of want to stick around and see what happens in Afghanistan. I don't think people worried that they're going to be killed by the advancing terrorists go, but I kind of want to see how this plays out. Do you mind if I stick around? Can I stick around here? I don't think that's how it works. I could be wrong, but I'm going to need to have you show your work on this one, Joe. But Joe doesn't like to work. He gave that speech, and then he hopped back on the helicopter and flew back to Camp David. I suspect, and this is just me, but I suspect that Joe Biden is receiving some kind of treatment or procedure, either cosmetic. Joe is not above that. He's got hair plugs. He's got some facelift and tucking issues going on. Or more likely, they are trying, since he's been so out of pocket and they didn't even bring press with them to Camp David, which they usually do, transparency. I suspect he's trying some sort of treatment to stave off the effects of dementia. And they want to keep that out of the view of the public and the press. So that's why, because there are camera facilities, there is a press facility. They could have easily handled this from Camp David, especially if Joe Biden's going to come back, give this 15-minute talk and take no questions as he stammers out of the room. If you're going to ignore the press, why go and do it in front of the press? It wasn't like you did it in the Rose Garden where the backdrop is the White House. They did it in a room where the backdrop is curtains, yellow curtains. I'm pretty sure there are yellow curtains at Camp David, or people wouldn't know where the hell it is and it wouldn't matter. There are plenty of things to stand in front of at Camp David to give a press conference. Remember that next time they lecture you about your carbon footprint, because I don't know what it is, but I know it's more than zero to fly Marine One back from Camp David for a half an hour and then fly Marine One back to Camp David because you can't be bothered to do your job. You won't be bothered to do your job. But the reaction to it initially was kind of a little bit shocking. I mean, MSNBC did, it's, I hate to give praise to CNN, and I'm not really giving praise to CNN, but Jake Tapper's initial response to the president's speech was rather telling. Jake, actually, in this audio clip, Jake sounds mad. Jake sounds pretty mad. He blasts O'Biden's speech, or O'Biden, might as well be. He blasts Biden's speech and calls out some of the absolute lies, such as him saying the buck stops here, when all he did was pass the buck throughout the whole damn thing. It was amazing. Now, CNN tempered its coverage later in the day. They see that the media was caught off guard. They didn't really have a plan to respond to the speech right off the bat. MSNBC is all so far in the tank that they were able to adapt on the fly, whereas CNN's Jake Tapper, I think Jake Tapper will stay pretty much where he is. I think he'll move on from the topic before he garbles the talking points of the left, whereas everybody else on CNN will just regurgitate the talking points. But listen to Jake Tapper blast Biden's speech right after it was done.
Been listening to President Biden speaking at the White House, forced to talk about the worsening crisis in Afghanistan, forced to speak to the nation after the calamity of the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. The president stated that he stands squarely behind the decision he made to withdraw all U.S. forces from Afghanistan, even though he has, in fact, been forced to send roughly 6,000 back in. The president saying, in fact, that if anything, the events of the last few days, this foreign policy and humanitarian disaster, proves to him that he made the right decision, given the fleeing of Afghan politicians from the country and the collapse of the Afghan military. The president said that the buck stopped with him, but in fact, this speech was full of finger pointing and blame, especially for the Afghans, even saying that while the U.S. would be working to rescue those Americans and U.S. allies who needed to be saved, he claimed part of the reason why the U.S. did not save sooner Afghan allies, the translators and others who worked with the U.S. military, who fear being slaughtered by the Taliban, they didn't act sooner, the president said, because some Afghans, he claimed, did not want to leave earlier because they were hopeful about a new Afghan government.
I love it. You could tell Jake is like, this is garbage. This is not any reflection of reality. This is not remotely close to what's going on, what happened. Oh, the reason we didn't, these people in fear of their lives, they really kind of just wanted to stick it out for a while. You see, you know, the offer to evacuate the translators who worked with the U.S. is not indefinite. We were leaving. If you're going to go, well, I know you're leaving in September, but I want to stick around till at least December. Maybe you can come back and get me. That's not the deal. That's not how it works, especially when you waited till the very end to even bother addressing the issue. This is just one of the many absurdities in Biden's speech. It's like the, well, if she didn't want me to be all over like that, she shouldn't have worn such a short skirt defense, which is, well, actually, come to think of it, it's kind of what, you know, Tara Reid, never mind. You can do the math on that. That's just one of the things that's absolutely bizarre. Now, Jake Tapper giving the response there is, I think it was a moment of anger. Jake Tapper's written a book called The Outpost about Afghanistan. I think he knows a lot of Afghan vets. And I think he's, I think he was more emotional. I suspect that he shall, as it moves on, become more rational and more liberal as the time goes on. But his initial reaction was absolutely 100% accurate. You're blaming the Afghans for your failure to plan? What's messed up is we got some audio coming up that we evacuated a lot of people yesterday, you know, 700 to 800. Weird they don't have an exact number. But a surprisingly small number of those people were Americans. Actually, let's go to that audio right now. U.S. Army Major General Hank Taylor speaking at the Pentagon yesterday, talking about the numbers of people that we evacuated. Now, we should be able to evacuate more. And if we had any, and this is, again, a failure of the Biden administration, they clearly were caught with their pants down. They've evacuated, like I said, 700 to 800 people yesterday. Listen to the number. They actually have a head count of the number who were Americans. And tell me if you think that maybe this number for the Americans should be a little bit higher. Maybe that they should be the priority here, especially if the Afghans are going, I kind of want to see what happens next.
Additionally, 7 C-17s departed. These flights lifted approximately 700 to 800 passengers, and we can confirm 165 of these passengers are American citizens. The rest are a mix of SIV applicants, third country nationals.
Third country, now, okay, now if they're like Brits or allies that were there, fine, but if they're just concerned citizens of Saudi Arabia or concerned citizens of France, or if you don't have troops, if you don't have skin in the game, I'm not really sure why we should be evacuating you. And the rest are the applicants that we should have had processed by now, but the Biden administration completely dropped the ball on them. We need to do background checks. We need to make sure that they actually are who they say they are, that they actually did work with the U.S. troops, that they're not extremists trying to come over here and hide in this country. There is a left-wing veterans organization right now out there spreading word on social media, telling people who would like to sneak in with those people, how to erase their social media footprint so that you can't find that maybe you were tweeting extremist things. But out of 700 to 800, only 165 were Americans. I want to get everybody who deserves to come out. And those who helped us absolutely should come out. But I just think maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm old-fashioned. The priority should be Americans. Shouldn't be like, oh, 20% of the seats are reserved for Americans. No, whatever's left over can be reserved for other people. Again, that's just me. I want to get through a bunch of this audio as quickly as possible here about Afghanistan and Biden's speech and the reaction to it. John Kirby, Admiral John Kirby, retired, U.S. Navy retired. He is the Pentagon spokesmodel. He was the Pentagon spokesmodel under Barack Obama, too. So if everything old seems new again. And in the interim, in the Trump years, he was a left-wing commentator on CNN. They snatched him up right away. They recognized one of their own, and it just shows you how sad the media really has become. Well, he's been doing his best to polish the turd that is the Biden administration. It's not going so well. It's not easy to polish a turd these days. A lot of smearing going on. You go through a lot of rags. You have to change clothes an awful lot. He was asked on CNN how many Americans are still in the country. He didn't know. There's a pretty wide berth that he gives. And you would think that, again, if the Biden administration inherited this withdrawal and there was nothing they could do about it, even though they extended it by 6 months, now that you had to go with what you were given, except for the massive change that we implemented, one would think that the ensuing 6 months that you added to it would give you more time to plan for all sorts of contingencies, all kinds of them. Like the collapse of the Taliban or the collapse of the Afghan government that we've been propping up with $1 trillion. It also might give you time to, I don't know, find out who the Americans are. Because as you're leaving the country, you at least want to give the Americans in the country the opportunity to leave with you, right? The only reason they're not being slaughtered by and large, or one of the main reasons anyway, is that the American troops are there. So if you start attacking Americans, then maybe you'd get killed yourself, and you probably don't want to do that. So you would use that time productively, or at least to use that time productively. One would think you would find the Americans, and you would know where the Americans are. Not a lot of ways out of Afghanistan, not a lot of airports in Afghanistan, commercial or otherwise. So you might just go, well, let's find out how many people there are. As of yesterday, they have, like I said, a pretty wide berth. Listen to how wide.
If I can get some specifics here, how many Americans do you believe to be in Afghanistan right now?
Well, we think there are certainly thousands of Americans. We don't have an exact count. I would say somewhere, best guess, between 5,000 and 10,000 that are near Kabul. There was a message put out by the State Department today, advising those Americans about how to queue up and how to get to the airport. So that we're now that security is better, they don't need to necessarily shelter in place, and they can begin movement to the airport for processing for flights out.
Doesn't that sound reassuring? You don't necessarily have to shelter in place. You don't necessarily have. Don't worry about that necessarily. You can probably make it to the airport. Good luck with you, though. But between 5 and 10,000, that's a pretty wide berth. That's a really wide berth. I don't know. There's two or three, I get. You know, there could be two or three heading. But 5 to 10,000, you don't have a better, more accurate count than that? It strikes me as disturbing that we don't have this information. Now, that was on CNN. Then John Kirby went back to the Pentagon. He's been all over television. Because when everybody else is on vacation and nobody can be bothered to do their job, you know, Ginger Goebbels is on vacation. Look, she bought non-refundable tickets. Isn't that what Democrats say? That's what the Texas Democrats who fled to Washington, D.C., said when they went to, I think it was Portugal or Spain or something like that, two of them, while they're fighting for democracy, they flew over to Europe. They said, well, we planned this vacation a while ago, and we bought non-refundable tickets. I don't know what I get, you know, no justice, no peace, but no refunding a ticket. No way I'm missing this trip to Portugal. Just, you can't make this stuff up. But John Kirby again at the Pentagon later in the day on Americans in Afghanistan.
That's one of the things that we're hearing is that people can't get through these Taliban checkpoints and they can't even get to the airport to leave.
Yeah, again, without going into the details of communications of which I'm not a part, as I said, there are interactions down at the local level. As the general said, we are processing American citizens to get out. So, again, Court, without speaking to the sausage making of communications here, thus far, and it's early on, the results are speaking for themselves, and I think that's probably where I'd like to leave it.
Now, he just tossed a giant word salad there, and I don't know what he was. I don't know what he said. Once he got past the, hey, man, I'm not involved in these discussions. They did send out a message to the Americans. Oh, really? Because they've got, reliable cell service in Kabul? Or they've got reliable internet in Kabul? What do they send them, DMs over Instagram? How do you get messages out to these people? How do you know they're read when these people are fearing for their lives? You might have to, see, because the only place in seemingly Afghanistan now that is secure for Americans is at the airport. I don't even think they control any of the terminals. I think they control a good chunk of the tarmac and the outside area. There may be some buildings they have in there, but it's certainly, just judging by the footage out there, not a lot of people hanging out inside those buildings, if they are, in fact, out there. They're all kind of clamoring to climb on planes as they're taking off. So to sit there and say, we sent them messages. How? How do you send these people messages? How do you know they were gotten? And if these people, now the Taliban is claiming, don't worry, we're coming in and we're very peaceful. We're going to be peaceful this time. Women can work, right? Women can work as long as they adhere to Sharia law, which is what? You can be beaten, you can be raped, you can be robbed, you don't have to be paid. Like, I'm not really sure that they're super progressive, but it does kind of tell you that something about the left in this country, that they're ready to believe them. Actually, the Taliban held a press conference this morning. They really are. They have an English spokesman who has gone on all the cable. I don't know that he's been on Fox, but he's been on CNN and MSNBC. And he's out there trying to basically say, like, he's got the Democratic talking points down. He knows how Democrats are. He knows the buzzwords that they have to use. And they're going to treat women with respect and blah, blah, blah. But then it's all under the guise of Sharia, which doesn't really treat women with respect at all. Like, oh, I respect you so much, honey. Now, wrap yourself in a couple of layers of bedsheet, even though it's 120 degrees outside, and walk around. Go make me dinner. Try not to set yourself on fire in those sheets, and try not to walk into anything. You can't see anything out there. But and don't talk unless I speak to you. Okay? No, good. I'm going to go out and hunt for a 7-year-old boy. Yeah. Things are real super progressive over there in Afghanistan under the Taliban. But that seems to be what they're relying on. The Taliban says that you can travel now and go to the airport, so you don't have to hunker in place anymore, says Admiral Kirby. Maybe that's true. I don't know. I imagine the Taliban doesn't want to start killing Americans right now. I assume they want to start killing Americans right now, but I think that they're smart enough to recognize that even Joe Biden's desperation to have this thing end would have to be put on hold should they start killing Americans right now. So they'd better not kill Americans right now. There'll be plenty of time for killing later. So while you've got that going for you, I imagine the Americans who have been told to hunker in place, to hide in place, as the Taliban, as reports, the Taliban going door to door looking for Americans, looking more, they're more looking for any Afghans who worked with Americans. I suspect that the Americans are probably not super keen on going, oh, well, they're all clear. Oh, they called Ali Ali Oxenfree. Well, I guess we can go. Let's go skipping down to the airport. So sending out a message is one thing. Why aren't we in contact with these people and know where they are and send out armed patrols in armored vehicles to get them? If the Taliban is peaceful and interested in just going along to get along, as they say, they certainly would have no problem with basically military Uber for Americans stuck in Afghanistan, hiding in Kabul, wouldn't you think? I would think. But then again, I would have been prepared for this eventuality, unlike the Biden administration, who seems to be shocked. It's like the Biden administration reminds me of when my kids were like two. Everything was new and amazing, and it was really easy to thrill them. I could pretend to eat any of their toys, and they'd go, wow. And then I'd pull it out of their ear or their butt or whatever. Look at this. I just found this Barbie. Oh, and they're amazing. You could see the thing hanging out of my hand the whole time. But they didn't catch on because they're little kids and they don't know what's going on. I think that's what they think the world is to them. Scary thought. And they might actually not be all that wrong. Now, you remember how I'd mentioned that the media was starting to get in line with Biden, right? I mean, it's just a patently false thing. One of the first good dogs to get in line, well, all of MSNBC was in line. They don't care. They are not. They are propaganda. They are Tokyo Rose on steroids. It is sad what they've become. And I'm surprised Microsoft doesn't, like, sue, because that's what MSNBC, people don't remember, it was a joint venture between Microsoft and NBC News. That's what the MS stands for, is Microsoft. But Microsoft got out of it a long time ago. I think they saw the writing on the wall pretty easily and pretty plainly. But one of the first people to swallow the hook and the line and the sinker was Nicole Wallace. Now, Nicole Wallace is a former, what is her job? She's like a communications person. Might have been White House Communications Director or Deputy White House Communications Director under George W. Bush. She was allegedly a conservative. She was more than likely a Republican, as evidenced by the fact that she really came to prominence, not in the Bush administration, but as the campaign spokesperson and the wrangler of Sarah Palin for the John McCain campaign in 2008. She is not a particularly bright person, certainly not honest, and not trustworthy, as evidenced by the situations of her, the circumstances of her divorce, which you can look up online for yourself. So she then found herself as the token Republican over at MSNBC. And as happens with everybody, you know, Michael Steele, former RNC chairman, he knows where the checks are coming from. And he knows what the audience will tolerate. And if you do not toe the liberal line, you're out. And, you know, getting MSNBC money is pretty good. Pretty big checks. Not a lot of work going on there. So he and Nicole Wallace became liberals, but still carry the moniker of, I'm a Republican. I'm a Republican. Yeah, right. She went on. She couldn't stop praising the speech. And she then said that 95% of the country can support, going to love that speech. 95% of the country. Listen to her make that claim.
95% of the American people will agree with everything he just said. 95% of the press covering this White House will disagree. And for an American president to finally be completely aligned with such an overwhelming majority of what the American people think about Afghanistan is probably a tremendous relief to the American people.
Probably just a tremendous relief. There's a difference between the American people saying, yes, we it's 20 years, that's enough, and the American people looking at the disaster that Joe Biden created and going, well, this seems like normal, regular order to me. Because while Nicole Wallace at a news organization just decides to spew a 95% number, just literally pull it out of her rear end. There is actually a poll on this. It was conducted from the 13th through the 15th of Americans by the Trafalgar Group. What best describes, this question is kind of telling you, what best describes how you feel about how President Biden is handling U.S. military operations in Afghanistan? The no opinion, 7.5%, no opinion. Why do you bother answering the phone, let alone answering a survey? Strongly approve. Okay, this is going to add to the ledger where she's saying 95%. Strongly approve, 10.7%. Approve, 12.4%. By my quick math, that's like 23.1%. That doesn't seem like a majority. That doesn't seem like 95%. Then disapprove, 9.8%, and strongly disapprove of Joe Biden's handling of operations in Afghanistan, 59.5%. You add the disapprove together, that is 69.3%. of the public actually disapproves of how Joe Biden is handling Afghanistan. So you gotta wonder what bubble Nicole Wallace lives in. Well, it turns out it's just not Nicole Wallace, or not just Nicole Wallace. It's Brian Williams. Remember him? Of course, he's a big-time veteran of wars. Just ask him. Don't believe him, but ask him. He'll tell you. He had on a former CIA operative and retired military guy named Matt Zeller, along with a whole bunch of lefties. Now, they must not have known who Matt Zeller was, because Brian Williams asks him a question, and Zeller, after going around everybody going, Biden, the greatest president ever, oh my God, this is the best speech I ever heard. Zeller brings a little bit of reality to this, and this clip is kind of funny.
So I'm curious to hear your reaction of this consequential speech by the American president. Didn't run from it. He owned it. He owned his decision. He owned the fact that, as he put it, the buck stops with him.
I hope he gets to own their deaths, too. I feel like I watched a different speech than the rest of you guys. I was appalled. There was such a profound, bold-faced lie in that speech. The idea that we planned for every contingency. I have been personally trying to tell this administration since it took office. I've been trying to tell our government for years that this was coming. We sent them plan after plan on how to evacuate these people. Nobody listened to us. They didn't plan for the evacuation of our Afghan wartime allies. They're trying to conduct it now at the 11th hour. The thing that they were most concerned about was the optics of a chaotic evacuation. Well, they got exactly what they were most concerned of by failing to do what was right when we could have done it.
Love it. I feel like I watched a different speech than you people. What the hell are you talking? He owned it, man. He was out there. He's bold leadership. No, he's a senile, doddering old man lying to the American public. No, what speech were you watching? Well, we were watching a speech from the greatest president ever. My God. MSNBC should be embarrassed, but they're incapable of it. Just a little bit more on this Afghanistan stuff, just because this illustrates how stupid our priorities are. When you see, like, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, I always want to call him Miley. It reminds me of Miley Cyrus, and frankly, if he started identifying as Miley Cyrus, it wouldn't surprise me, because he is very, very concerned about gender equity, racial equity. He's the guy who said, I want to understand white rage, and I'm white. Rawr! Yeah. Okay, talk to people who pay your salary and see how you treat them, and you can understand why people might be a little bit angry at you, you piece of garbage. But the Newsweek writer Richard Hanania? I don't know. H-A-N-A-N-A or N-A-I, whatever. He went digging through some U.S. government reports and to found out the priorities of our government. You wonder why maybe things didn't take over there in Afghanistan. Like, maybe it's because we were trying to make them us, you know, rather than make them free and set them free and let them be free, whatever it is, we were trying to impose us. We imposed things like gender studies at the local university, because that's going to come in handy. right? It's still a Muslim country. It is largely illiterate, and it is definitely very devout, no matter what religion. It's like taking over a Jewish country and going, or setting free a Jewish people, going, you know, we're going to teach you about the virtues of bacon. Like, that doesn't really make sense. Know your audience, right? You should know your audience. You should know your audience. We don't. We didn't. And you end up with the debacle that we have. But they said the analysis found that U.S. government has disbursed more than $787.4 million. That is more than $750 million if you're playing the home game, for activities primarily intended to support Afghan women and girls. However, because hundreds of other U.S. programs and projects included an unquantified gender component, this amount significantly understates the actual level of U.S. support for women, girls, and gender equality. Now, again, we're talking about in Afghanistan, gender equality. Gender, that's your priority, gender equality. This shows why we should never, ever get into nation building. Because we're not nation, we're not trying to build a nation or let the nation happen, let the nation take form. We are trying to make it a mini-me, or mini-us, mini-left, really. It's always the leftists who are out there doing this. Remember, if a right-winger, if a conservative says anything that is remotely determined to be offensive by the left, they are run out of polite society. Remember when Ann Coulter said after 9/11, what we should do is invade their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity. She was largely joking. She was being absurdist to make a point. That's what so many people on the right and the left miss about Ann's humor. But there was, you know, outrage over that. And she, like National Review, made a big stink about, we're not going to run her columns anymore. This is so hurtful and hate-filled. And meanwhile, the World Trade Center is still smoldering. And Anne makes a joke about the people who killed those people. Well, that's beyond the pale. We must understand. We must understand our enemies. No, we should probably just kill them. You know, we can understand them when we read their dream journals after their funerals. Then we can try to understand them. But to sit there and spend well over $1 billion on gender equality in a majority Muslim country that has just emerged from Taliban 1.0 rule, where gender equality was not an issue at all. And it wasn't like, well, Afghanistan before that, why, it was just a utopia. They actually had many, many female leaders. No, women were certainly more free than under the Taliban. There was nowhere to go but up with the Taliban. But they did not have this utopic world. Some women, particularly in the cities, were free, but we're not talking about spending money in Kabul. The people of Kabul, if you really want to go in and lecture a bunch of people about women, girls, and gender equality, you probably don't need to do that in the metropolitan areas, by and large. There's going to be a contingent there for sure, but by and large, the real problem lies in the rural goat farming areas. And they're not interested in going to your universities because they've never been to school. They would be confused by the concept of a toothbrush, although we should have definitely introduced them to that. And then you start with learning. But you don't then go, all right, we are going to start with learning. And your first lesson of the day is, here's a list of 800 different pronouns and genders and how they correspond to one another. You don't introduce that to a country like you don't introduce that to any country, but you definitely don't introduce that to a country like Afghanistan. It's insane that we would do this. So you wonder, what in the hell have we been doing for 20 years? This is what we've been doing. And have you seen, it's hilarious and sad at the same time and for the same reason. There's a lot of video circulating out there of, it's been around for a while. It should have sent up a bunch of red flags with our so-called political leaders and intelligence community, but it didn't. But there's a lot of video out there of American soldiers, American troops, trying to train Afghan soldiers. Now, they're not training them in advanced hand-to-hand combat. They're not trying to turn them into ninjas. They're not even trying to turn them into American Ninja Warriors. They are trying to get them to do jumping jacks. I'm not even kidding. It's sad and pathetic, but I'm not kidding. They're trying to get them to do jumping jacks, and they can't do it. They don't even come. Some of them get it. It's granted, look, if you've never seen a jumping jack, if you've never seen somebody doing a cartwheel, you're not going to get it right out of the box. But it's not brain surgery. It's not even putting together a Lego truck following instructions. It's a human being standing in front of you, jumping, spreading their legs, landing with their legs apart, while simultaneously raising their arms above their head. And then jumping again, bringing their arms together, bringing their legs together and their arms back down, and then repeating it. I give you 5 minutes on a learning curve to figure this out. The Afghan soldiers, if you can call them, the Afghans trying to become Afghan trainees, couldn't do it. Some of them could not do it. They were like crouching. It's really bizarre. It was almost as though they'd never once in their lives played like a mirror with somebody. You know, I'm going to do something and you have to mirror it back to me. They were literally crouching down, jumping from a crouching position, flailing their arms in a circle, spinning. Like, you sit there and you go, this has to be a Saturday Night Live skit. Except you recognize that you're laughing and Saturday Night Live isn't funny. And then you sit there and you start laughing, and then you go, this cost us $1 trillion. And then you start crying. But this is what we were dealing with. And you're going to lecture these people about gender equality, various pronoun uses. Apparently, in the Pashto language, there's no term for gender, according to Richard Hanania, that they just use the direct English word without any translation. I don't know how you can train these people to then accept the 57 genders that Facebook offers, or I guess the endless stream, because every day you can make up a new pronoun for yourself. Why did we lose in Afghanistan? Well, because we kneecapped ourselves. We tried to make them us. God forbid anybody. Nobody wants to be us. Hell, I don't even want to be us half the time. By the way, one last thing on this Afghanistan debacle and the left. You know, it gives everybody in this country a chance to virtue signal. Governor Hogan and Larry Hogan in Maryland going, oh, we'll happily take all the refugees you got. The Democratic governor going, we'll take all the refugees you can shovel our way. Come on, bring it in. We would be wrong to do that. Yeah, it would be wrong to do that. But then it's wrong to have created the situation where so many people are trapped, fleeing for their lives, scared to death. Their lives are under threat by the Taliban. It was wrong to create this situation when you had months and months and months to plan this out, when you gave yourself 6 extra months to plan this out. Politico this morning in their daily newsletter, they write other on this very issue about how you could screw this up. Others in the administration say the White House let political fear of GOP attacks make them act too cautiously on relocating Afghans to the U.S. Now, it was Republicans. It was this show and other conservatives like me going, we need to get these translators out of there before the Taliban takes over, before we leave, because they are going to be killed. We've been saying that for months and months and months. This sneaks up on nobody. But they're saying, well, they're afraid of GOP attacks. Now, if you're afraid to do, first of all, the GOP wasn't going to attack. It's not, there's a difference in the left. This is the problem with the left conflating a wide open southern border in the dumbest game of Red Rover ever with taking in refugees, particularly from a country where we are leaving and helped create the refugee problem. It's a huge difference between those two. The left doesn't see that. They don't want you to see a difference between illegal immigration and legal immigration. So they don't want you to see this anyway. But to say we knew the right thing to do, but we didn't do the right thing because we were scared that the Republicans would say mean things about us. Politico continues. As one administration official put it, quote, "It's like they want the credit from liberals for ending the Trump cruelty to immigrants and refugees, but they also don't want the political backlash that comes from actual refugees arriving in America in any sort of large numbers." It's such garbage. If you're afraid to do or unwilling to do the right thing because you might get some political blowback, you don't have the right thing in you, and frankly, you have no business being in politics whatsoever. Period. End of story. Get the hell out of it. Who do you think you're fooling? You're not fooling me. You're not fooling anybody. We're not going to do this. No, you're just incompetent. This is an ex post facto excuse. They're now scrambling to find ways to justify their indifference and incompetence on the issue. Their failure. Either they thought too highly of it. Maybe they really believed that the Afghans were ready to take over and all things were going to go well. And so they said, well, we don't really have to plan for this. Or they're lying. They're stupid. They didn't care. I mean, you pick. It's a giant bag of things, none of which are good in this bag of descriptors. But that's the way the left is when you look at them in this situation. They're just dishonest and bad people. And I mean that in the nicest possible way, which is, of course, not at all. Before we get on to the Australia news and whatever, I'm trying to think of how to do this. This is a very industry insider story in Variety. In the Hollywood, not the radio industry or anything, the Hollywood industry. But I just, it's example or exhibit 10,521,000,000 that Hollywood is completely out of ideas, devoid of ideas. And they just don't even know where to go. They've drained the bubble in which they live of oxygen. And they won't venture outside of it because it's too scary. And this is the problem with you if you're not a left winger. You can't get anything made in Hollywood these days. You know, they're like, well, this is a great story, but I'm not sure which character would be trans. And what is the ethnic makeup of the cast? And, you know, really, there's no tackling the trans issue at all. And I found the use of standard pronouns to be offensive. So we can't produce this script, which I think is absolutely brilliant. And I would love to make under any other circumstance. That seems like a typical pitch meeting at Hollywood. If you want to get something made, well, there's a young woman of color who is really a trans boy. All right. Well, let me grab my checkbook. You keep talking. And as you throw more buzzwords my way, I'm going to just keep adding zeros to the check. And they're being screwed over by the big corporation. They're going to lose their house. Now you're getting me turned on here. Now I see why Harvey Weinstein went so crazy, because I don't know how you survive a pitch meeting like this without just trying to attack the person across from you. It's insane what is coming out of Hollywood. And now, of course, all the award shows that they live for are like, well, we're going to need the 23andMe makeup DNA profile of everybody who worked on the movie, because we need to know whether or not it can be considered to be nominated if it wasn't diverse enough. Also, yeah, you're going to have to ask the sexual proclivities of everybody who worked on the movie, because again, if it's not diverse enough, we can't nominate you. When they're not doing that, they're remaking things. You see, they're coming out with a new Wonder Years, right? It's the new Wonder Years. And it's called, believe it or not, The Wonder Years. They're so devoid of new ideas, they couldn't even come up with a new name. Well, it's just The Wonder Years. But this time, the little kid is black. So there you go. There's the diversity. Now, for my money, if I'm a minority in Hollywood or a woman in Hollywood, and I say, we need more women projects, and somebody says, well, why don't you just take James Bond and make him a chick? I'm going to go, that's not what I mean. You know, I want something original. We don't need to be patronized by going, all right, well, here's our table scraps. Go ahead. Go have fun with this. Oh, you want more black faces on TV? Well, why don't you redo The Wonder Years, but with black people? All right, good. We get Don Cheadle to do the voiceover. It'd be wonderful. It'd be marvelous. That's what we have now every single day on your TV screen, or these stupid nostalgia shows. I once got into an argument with the creator of the Goldbergs. I don't know if you've ever seen that show, The Goldbergs, set in the 80s. And it just seems, it's like popcorn is a delivery device for butter and salt, and that's it. Like, if you just had plain popcorn, somebody fed you plain popcorn for the first time, and you never had popcorn, you'd go, why are you making me eat styrofoam? Why do you hate me? What is wrong with you? The Goldbergs is just a delivery device for nostalgia. Nostalgia for nostalgia's sake. It's set in the 80s, but you'd never know when. Because everything that came to be in the 80s is happening simultaneously. It doesn't matter, you know, MC Hammer and Parachute Pants and Pac-Man and E.T. The 80s was a 10-year span. They didn't all happen at once. And I got into an argument with him, and if I remember correctly, this was years ago. I remember him sort of acquiescing that this isn't really, it's more nostalgia for nostalgia's sake. And I'm like, okay, well, that explains why somebody's driving a DeLorean and the Berlin Wall is flying and like or falling. And I'm like, doesn't make any sense. Well, to add to the Hollywood being out of ideas completely, they're now, Variety reports, Field of Dreams is going to become a series. Now, this is, of course, immediately after the baseball game in Iowa at the field for Field of Dreams. Well, next to the field or Field of Dreams was filmed. They built a whole new stadium on that cornfield next to the stadium or the field where they filmed the movie. I don't know why they couldn't just use the one, but I guess it's probably too close to the house to build the stadium for 8,000 people. But a TV show based on Field of Dreams. What do you do? The movie Field of Dreams is a great movie. And it's more, I'm surprised they're doing it, actually, because it's more of a movie for fathers and sons than anything else. And that seems wildly exclusionary. I imagine they're going to have a diverse cast. However, one of the kids, they'll bring back some ball player and they'll be, you know, trans ball players or something. Or they'll bring back the women from A League of Her Own or whatever. But they're making a movie out of this. The problem is the movie covered it all. The movie is, you know, it's a line. It's actually a complete circle. It's self-contained. How do you make a TV show out of that? It doesn't matter. They don't have ideas, but they have a need for content. So they're just going to belch this stuff out every once in a while. Now, it's being done for the Peacock Network. I suppose right now, if you're a liberal and you have any crackpot stupid idea, or you own the rights to some garbage novel or whatever, now's the time to go and pitch it, because everybody's getting their streaming services on it. Not only are there 10 trillion channels, there are 10 trillion subscription services, and you can run in there and say, well, why don't we do this? And they go, well, all right, here you go. Here's Netflix money and Netflix is throwing money at the Obamas. Why not throw money at you? All you have to be is not conservative and you could probably get it. Oh, if you're a conservative, then you say, yeah, but I want to make an anti-Trump movie or an anti-Trump TV show or make a TV show where the bad guy is a Trump-like character. Then the Brinks trucks just start rolling up to your houses. Now, they've got the guy who did The Good Place producing this. They say, quote, through the years, Field of Dreams has remained a fan favorite, maintaining its rightful position in the zeitgeist, said the president of NBC Universal Television and Streaming, Lisa Katz. It's whimsical and grounded, a space where Michael Schur, the guy who did it, Good Place, excels. And we're looking forward to bringing a new version of this classic to Peacock. Do we really need a new version of Field of Dreams? Is that what the world is missing? Is that what we're looking at and what we're seeing? Is the world clamoring for give us more of the same? Give us empty calories. What you can't get made is, well, they did make a movie, but it had to be independently financed and produced. You couldn't get a movie made in Hollywood about the greatest serial killer of all time. Have every third episode of whatever Law and Order thing is up there is about how some right winger is really a closeted something or other, and they're horrible, beating their children or something, or murdered their wife, their family man, but they're really horrible, horrible, horrible. You can get that made. But Kermit Gosnell, the greatest serial killer of all time, the most prolific serial killer, and probably all of human history as far as direct action on that person. People have ordered more deaths, but committed them. It'd be a tough, tough slog to beat Kermit Gosnell, particularly in this country. You couldn't get that movie made. It had to be produced independently, outside of Hollywood. You couldn't really get distribution because, well, you can't. No theater chain would touch it because, well, theater chains are beholden to the left-wingers in Hollywood. And if they're starting to show movies that conservatives put out, well, then maybe you don't get the Avengers movie right the weekend that it comes out. Maybe you have to wait. Maybe your competitor gets that. It's all subtle. It's all implied. It's all with a wink and a nudge and a little bit of elbow to the ribs and going, you know, we know, right? You got this, right? That's how Hollywood works. By the way, if you don't have Peacock, I wouldn't blame you for that. But if you want to talk about just regurgitating the ideas of the past into this, yeah, Field of Dreams is perfect. It doesn't need to be remade. It doesn't need to be ruined. It doesn't need to be reimagined. It needs to be left the hell alone. They also did reboots on the Peacock of Saved by the Bell, Punky Brewster. Was that on for like 3 years? Is anybody going, gee, I wonder whatever happened to Soleil Moon Frye? Whatever. I need to find out what's happening with Punky Brewster. No. Battlestar Galactica and Queer as Folk. And that was a show on Showtime. And then apparently, and this is where, again, they're making a drama. A drama out of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. The alternative would, I mean, you could make this stupid stuff and you just set piles of money on fire. It's their money, set it on fire. But if you'd like to maybe have a chance at a return on that investment, maybe you just go, hey, perhaps we should consider some stories that conservatives might like. Maybe we, instead of, hey, the 80th gay drama. Because if you just watch TV, you think, wow, 92% of the population is transgender and homosexual. If you just watched our pop culture. But maybe, just maybe, you might want to try something original. Like, I don't know, people who like the country, people who aren't constantly complaining about how awful the nation is. Things like that. Things where those evil conservatives aren't trying to murder people for being different, but maybe going about their business and their lives. Seems like every time somebody does get something like that, sneak one past the goalie, it works. They make money, but to the left, they want to make the money, but they'd really just rather win politically. Like I told you, progressives are progressives first and foremost, and anything else, a distant second. One last thing on this Hollywood garbage, because I'm somebody who, I love movies. Most Saturday nights, when my wife doesn't fall asleep early or the kids aren't bouncing off the walls and setting the house on fire, we tend to have a popcorn party, watch a movie, whatever. Usually I pick it because I have good taste in movies. My wife's taste is terrible, and she knows it. Even if she's listening, she knows it. So I absolutely love watching movies. It's a great escape. I had delusions of wanting to be in the movie business when I was younger, all that kind of stuff. But now we're looking at a world where entertainment isn't the objective anymore. It's not even a consideration, I wouldn't think, judging by this garbage. There's a new Marvel movie coming out. I don't know if it's coming out now or coming out. No, it's not coming out until September 3rd. But they had their world premiere, because they always have that early. And Associated Press was there with their cameras. The movie is called Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. I worked in a comic book store when I was a kid. I have no idea what this is. It's, you know, must have been after my time or something. Or it just wasn't a big hit at the time. But it's, as it sounds, it is an Asian comic book. It's not an Asian comic book. It's a comic book about an Asian guy. Made by Marvel. It's funny. The left got very excited when, and if you have Netflix, I love the Marvel series on there. The Daredevil one is awesome. The Punisher, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, even Iron Fist. It gets better if you watch it more than once. First time I watched it, I thought it was terrible. But Iron Fist is about a karate guy, to put it in the most basic terms. But in the comic book, he was originally a white guy. And so they cast a white guy, and they made it with a white guy. But the left went nuts, going, why are they making Iron Fist with a white guy? Like, well, do you not know that it's based on a comic book? So I assume that's kind of why Marvel picked a book nobody'd ever heard of to make a movie about. And so the story, rather than, you know, hey, the movie's great or anything like that, and this is why I love Marvel movies, but I probably won't go see this. I didn't go see Black Widow because it was all about, oh, it's female empowerment. Like, if you're marketing garbage like that, I just want to know if it's any good. That's it. I'll watch it when it's on cable, when I don't have to pay for it. There's a AP put out, critically important, all in caps, the cast of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings celebrated the Marvel film at its world premiere, with the stars saying it's a milestone for Asian and Asian-American representation on screen. And just like, how about it's a good movie, all right? I don't care about the representation. And in fact, when I hear that garbage, I just go, look, if you're just going to beat me over the head with a PC message, I'm not interested. Is it any good? That's all I care about. That's all I care about. Will it entertain me for 2 hours or an hour and a half or whatever? And if it will, I'm in. If it won't, or if it's going to be beating me over the head with some politically correct message, I'm out. I'm not into it. And you say, well, that's a little bit harsh, Derek. Well, there's a writer named Roslyn Taulusan, T-A-L-U-S-A-N, who writes for the AV Club and for Vice News. She found, because the left is constantly looking for ways to be offended, she found a book by somebody called Pippa Middlehurst called Dumplings and Noodles. It's a cookbook. And Pippa Middlehurst is an attractive, red-haired white woman. And she tweeted out, why did a white woman write a cookbook about dumplings and noodles? Now, Roslyn Taulusan is, I don't know, she looks like she might be part Asian. She's very, very left-wing. In her Twitter bio, she lists herself as an anti-rape activist. Are there pro-rape activists? She says, Dumplings and Noodles explores the tradition of cooking noodles behind cooking methods behind some of our best-loved Asian dishes, with over 70 recipes. And then she just says all question marks, like, what business does this white lady have making this cookbook about anything? How dare you? Well, it turns out that somebody did just a little bit of Googling on Pippa Middlehurst. Turns out that she has been learning East and Southeast Asian cooking for over 15 years and attended an actual noodle school in China. She knows what she's doing. She happens to like it. But you're not allowed to like something if you are of the wrong ethnicity, the wrong color. So I'm afraid that even if I wanted to see Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, I'm a white guy. They don't want me. I'm not allowed to go there. The left would picket my house if I dared watch this movie. This is the stupid world that liberalism is creating. Now, I would point out that Roslyn Taulusan or whatever was tweeting this gripe about cultural appropriation on Twitter, a platform created by a white guy, a straight white guy. She's not a straight white guy. What business does she have using Twitter? See, you can take anything liberals do to the point of absurdity, because they're absurd. Now, I do want to get to the news from down under. The news from down under down there. You think all the blood is rushing to their heads or something, the way that they're reacting to some of these things. First, I have an audio clip from the guy who runs, I think it's New South Wales, where Melbourne is, the premier of the New South Wales. He's a guy named Daniel Andrews. Now, they're all in lockdown down there in New South Wales, in Australia, really almost across the board, because of, well, COVID. So, Mr. Andrews comes out and makes an announcement. This is so bizarre, and I'm trying to, like, find the most... non-mocking news site from Australia to find it. But this is, the Australians love their beer, all right? They love their beer. Crikey, they love their beer. I want you to listen to the new decree, this mask mandates. Now, keep in mind, if you're going to drink a cup of coffee and you're wearing a mask, what do? You take your mask off. That's perfectly legal in Australia. But beer, not so much.
There will be no removal of masks to consume alcohol outdoors. So you will no longer be able to remove your mask to drink a cocktail at a pop-up beer garden on a footpath as part of a pub crawl.
No taking your masks off to drink beer in a pub crawl outside. You cannot be sitting outside and take your mask off because you're going to drink a beer. Because you're drinking a beer. I don't know how are you supposed to drink a beer? Through your mask? I don't know how effective that's going to be at protecting anybody from COVID, but that seems to be what the rule is. You've got to drink it through your mask, or you can't drink it, or whatever. The story comes to us from something called Emeterra, Australian news website. Prime Minister Daniel Andrews has announced that he's angry at what happened over the weekend and is not allowed to remove his mask to drink alcohol outdoors. People were drinking in Australia, as people do, as human beings do. People were outside drinking beer. And so he came down and made a decree. Again, this is government by decree. BizPack review. Australia is currently experiencing a new peak of coronavirus cases, with the state of Victoria at a tipping point after reaching 478 new infections and 7 deaths on Monday. I guess it's the state of Victoria. But I thought Melbourne was in. I can't keep track of these things. Their state premier, Daniel Andrews, is imposing tougher restrictions in response, including a ban on removing face masks in public to drink alcohol. After hearing what he said, I understand Victoria police are looking at what occurred at the weekend at a number of licensed venues. We've seen people turning the footpath into an impromptu beer garden and doing pub crawls. We've seen a lot of people flouting these rules, not doing as they should, making these really poor choices, he said. The event, Walk, Talk, and Sip, was advertised on social media as an outdoor bar crawl of sorts. It encouraged people in the suburbs of Richmond to walk from bar to bar without taking drinks over the weekend. So going bar, you know, most bars are, in a lot of cities, are located together. And, you know, you go there and you can do a pub crawl. Well, they didn't like that. Andrew's response included extending the lockdown that was supposed to end Thursday to September 2nd and imposing a 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew beginning on Tuesday. People defied their premier over the weekend. Even though, now, you say, well, the numbers of deaths are up to 7, and the numbers of new cases were 478. This is something that happened over the weekend, okay? This is a story from Monday. The gestation period of COVID is longer than, you know, 12 minutes. The idea that somehow this one is the other, post hoc, ergo opter hoc. No, it's not one then the other. Now, if you say in a week these people start turning up sick, you might have a case. You still wouldn't have a case against their liberty. But to then say, some people defied me, no taking off your masks to drink beers, and oh, by the way, you were supposed to be freed by your government on Thursday, I'm now extending that. You are now grounded for another 2 weeks, mister. Really? He just added 2 weeks arbitrarily to the lockdown. Hey, you're grounded for another. You talk back to me again, and I'll make it 3 weeks. It's like the principal, whatever his name was, from The Breakfast Club. How many more Saturdays do you want ruined? Another one. Another. So he adds 2 weeks and a curfew. A curfew from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. because people were out enjoying themselves. People were out living their lives. How dare they? How dare they? Critics of the new restrictions say that mandates like curfews aren't supremely effective at curbing infection rates. Yeah, because they've been under lockdown. They've been under curfews in the past. And guess what happens? It keeps going. Now, talk about lockdowns, talk about curfews, talk about restrictions. The entirety of New Zealand is locked down. They're locked down. It's done. It's over. You're not going anywhere. On the island of New Zealand, actually, I think it's two islands of New Zealand. The prime minister there, Jacinda Ardern is how you pronounce it. She was praised by love because she locked down everything. She also seized the guns a few years ago. She's been held up as an example by leftists here in this country of what we should be like. She made a little announcement yesterday for the people of New Zealand. If you're a fan of the Lord of the Rings movies, first of all, get better taste in movies. Secondly, you're not going to be able to go and visit New Zealand. She's locked it down. She has made it a prison island. You cannot visit New Zealand through at least the rest of this year, according to a decree from the Prime Minister. But yesterday, she took it a little bit further. Listen to this decree from the Prime Minister on how you don't leave your house and don't talk to anybody.
Stay local and do not congregate. Don't talk to your neighbours. Please keep to your bubbles. It comes down again to those very simple principles. We know from overseas cases of the Delta variant that it can be spread by people simply walking past one another. So keep those movements outside to the bare minimum, wear a mask, and make sure you keep up that physical distancing.
Don't leave your house, don't talk to your neighbors, stay inside your bubble. Now, what's ironic about this is the video of this. She's rambling on, and as happens with every politician, liberal politician, there's somebody sign languaging right next to her. I don't think it's her daughter. I don't think they live together. Stay in your bubble. Then why isn't your sign language woman hermetically sealed in a Tupperware container, flailing around like that? Why are you allowed to have your staff around you? The people of New Zealand, don't talk to your neighbors, but damn it, if you work for the government, make sure you show up to work, especially if you work for the prime minister. Go to work, do your job. Now you think, my God, what is going on in New Zealand? What is happening down there? Are they in the midst of a massive outbreak? Are they watching horrible things happen down there? Bodies piling up? What's going on? Well, here's what's going on, and here's why the entire country is on lockdown and why everybody is told to stay inside. This is from Bloomberg News. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern put the nation into a three-day lockdown. 3 days doesn't make any sense. As we're told, what? The gestation period, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks. The Australian athletes who went to the Olympics who were vaccinated, who had already quarantined, they had to quarantine for 28 days, but 2 weeks is what you're supposed to quarantine for because you could apparently have it and not know it for that long. But 3 days. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern put the nation into a 3-day lockdown after the discovery of the first community case of COVID-19 since February. One case in the entire country, and everybody is ordered into their houses forever and ever and ever. Now, this has been, New Zealand has been a prison island, a fortress throughout most of this. You couldn't travel if you're some rich, you know, Hollywood person who bought a ranch in New Zealand. If you aren't a citizen, you probably couldn't go there. If you weren't there already, you couldn't get back. You're just kind of screwed. You can't visit your property. And now they have one case, and the entire country, not the city where it was found, the entire country was thrown into a complete 3-day lockdown. The snap lockdown, Bloomberg reports, will begin at midnight tonight as authorities rush to identify the source of a single infection in the largest city, Auckland, Ardern said at a news conference Tuesday in Wellington. While genome sequencing has yet to be completed, the case is assumed to be the highly infectious Delta variant, she said. How? I get, how would it get there? Delta has been a game changer, and we're responding to that, Ardern said. The best thing we can do is get out of this quickly as we can, is to go hard. It is New Zealand's first nationwide lockdown since the initial pandemic response over a year ago. Under so-called Alert Level 4, all schools, public venues, and most businesses must close, and people are urged to wear face coverings if they need to venture out. Only shops providing essential services such as groceries, gasoline, and health products can stay open. Health products. Gasoline. What do you need gasoline for if you're not going out? The New Zealand dollar plunged more than 1 US cent when the case was reported, falling to as low as 67.07 cents. Australia has gone into complete disarray over one case. One case, and they've had one case since February. It's the power. You give these people the power, and they will never relinquish it. By relinquish it, I mean give it back to you. Give it back to me. Give it back to us. In fact, this is giving them perfect cover with leftists out there. This story out of, it's STV News out of the UK. Scotland. The Scottish government seeks to make emergency COVID powers permanent. Why would you need to make them permanent? The Scottish government wants its emergency coronavirus powers to become permanent, including the ability to order schools to close, impose lockdowns, and operate virtual courts. Ministers are considering changing the law to permanently allow them to release prisoners early or permit a wider range of healthcare professionals to give vaccinations. They seek the public's views on removing the planned expiration date for many of the temporary measures, with Deputy First Minister John Swinney arguing that some of the changes have had a demonstrable benefit to the people of Scotland. Well, unless they're not allowing them to eat haggis anymore, I'm not really sure what the benefit would be. The majority of government's current powers introduced during the pandemic are due to lapse in March 2022. March 2020, that's a long time. It's an emergency measure. We don't know how long it's going to be. Rather than make it a month at a time, say over in the UK, over in Europe, over in the rest of the world, they view government very differently than we view government here. And again, it falls into the, well, if you think, well, they speak English. They're just like us. They make movies we can understand, and we enjoy their movies, and music we can understand, and we enjoy their music. They must be just like us. They're nowhere near us. They're nothing like us. We don't have anywhere to go if the United States is overtaken by the totalitarian progressives. We don't. There's nothing we can do. They have places they can go. The freedom-loving people of Scotland can try and escape to the United States. The freedom-loving people of the United States can't escape to Scotland. They're going to make things permanent. They were already ready to have these emergency powers through March of next year. Although those powers can be extended by 6 months with the Prime Minister's backing. But the consultation published by the government wants to make many permanently available, claiming it would ensure, quote, ministers can respond effectively and rapidly to any future threats to public health in Scotland. Today it's Scotland. Tomorrow it's this state, the other state, the United States. This is how it is. You get people into a frenzy. And I'm not somebody who says that COVID isn't serious. I believe COVID is serious, and you should take all the precautions you can and are comfortable with in protecting yourself from it. But you should also take any and all actions you can to protect yourself from government and government overreach. And that's what we're seeing here. These people have power. They love having power. They went into that business to have power. And they're not in a hurry to get it up, give it back. So you have to create the panic. You have to sustain the panic. You have to keep people worried so that you can say, well, there's going to be another emergency in the future. It would save valuable time. if we just had these powers, had the power to control every aspect of your life, rather than having to pass a piece of legislation, rather than have to debate things in the future, if we already just had the power to control you on a whim, then we would be much better off. Well, maybe those in power would be much better off. Would you? I don't think you would. In fact, I know you wouldn't. Well, that's about it for today, I would say. Didn't get a chance to get to everything, but came pretty damn close to it. That's the beauty of just things moving along. Tomorrow, there'll be another thing to get to, and if not, we can cover some of the things we didn't get to today, or if it's relevant, we'll cover it anyway. That's the magic of this medium, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. You can have your ears back, but just for a little while. I'll see you tomorrow.
There will be no removal of masks to consume alcohol outdoors.